Welcome to episode number 39 of the Going for Greatness show. I am your host, Jennifer Weissman. We can all agree that Elon Musk is a brilliant man. And in November 2023, he visited Israel to see for himself what the Hamas terrorists did to innocent civilians on October 7th. And he came away thinking that the path to prosperity for the Palestinians is one of the most important ways forward. Israel is in a tipping point. Remember that Israel stands alone in a sea of dictators in the Middle East, and it is the lone democracy in that region. So, in making the case for what Israel can contribute and has contributed to the world, I started to think, who could I speak to? And this led me to my conversation today with former Israeli ambassador Shemi Tsur. Shemi had been an ambassador for Israel in so many countries, I can't even name them all, but they include New Zealand and Cyprus and Finland and Estonia and Turkmenistan and just so many places. So Shemi and I had a very candid conversation about Israel's contributions to the world and how it hopes to make the world a little bit better and maybe understand why Israel is so misunderstood. Without further ado, here are some of the highlights of my conversation with former Israeli ambassador Shemi Tsur.
Came and we contributed these insulin injections that they needed. We brought from Israel, this small country in the Middle East, that it's not a troublemaker. On the contrary, it's a country that contributes and try to make the world a little bit better. Because whatever we gain, we share with others. For in communication, any communication system that you hold, even that small mobile that you have, it has an Israeli compound. Take issues like drip irrigation. So we came with this solution of drip irrigation that you use the minimum of the minimum of water to reach peace with our neighbors. We hope so. That's the dream. It was just like a dream come true. Suddenly, yes, we're talking peace with our neighbors, calling for peace. This is the dream. This is the faith. This is what we believe. We are faithful people, book of the books. We teach us always that quest of peace and friendship with others.
How did you find common ground when you faced perhaps dislike, perhaps pushback? You tell me, what did you face as an Israeli ambassador?
Each and every country, of course, is different. If we take Cyprus, which was my first ambassadorship, 94, actually. We had diplomatic relation with Cyprus from the 50s. But Cyprus was a small country near to Israel, but at the same time, very near to many Arab countries. They hardly had any business with Israel. They were threatened, like, if there will be business with Israel, then won't be any business with the Arab countries. So one of the main things was to explain and to build this trust that it's not zero-sum game. Like, you can be very friendly with the Arab countries. We never, ever say anything about it. But at the same time, yes, we can do business with Israel. And we started slowly, slowly to building up to find out what's those areas that they can take from Israel and we can take from them also, because it's always both sides to be participating. And then things that we can contribute, like, you know, Cyprus, it's a very dry country. While I was there, there were about 4 years of drought. The country was really having no water, close all the gardens and pools and that. We came with that idea. So we have the knowledge, the expertise of desalination plant that we built there. We saved this country.
You exported the desalination technology to Cyprus and you helped them become a lush country.
Absolutely. It's different approach. Like with Finland, we wanted very much with this area of high tech. It's high tech, you know, this is the birthplace of the mobile phone. It started with Nokia. We built up together some contact that Israeli engineers and Finnish engineers start sharing knowledge and expertise. We opened centers for Nokia in Tel Aviv. Aviv, many startups together. We built up kind of a fund, Finnish business people and Israeli people, that they can share and they get some amount of money that can start a business together. I'm taking Finland as a country which was criticizing Israel very much on the issue of Israeli-Palestinians. We explained that we are democracy. We are very much democratic country with all the values of democracy and taking care of human rights. Unfortunately, we are in a situation daily suffering from attacks. We had since our independence 5 big wars, endless terrorist attacks. So we have to protect our citizens, and this is the obligation. Any government will do that. I was there during the second Lebanon war, and they say, oh, you're using massive attacks against Lebanon. I said, well, just take it, for example, that you also have part of your country under occupation of the Russian. One of your cities at the north would be bombarded, rocket launched to civilian areas. Would the government accept it? We did it to stop it. Try to explain that, try with diplomatic ways, and we were trying very much. But when it's continue and it's harmed people and people died, houses destroyed and people start leaving their areas, farmers couldn't work at their land because of this attack, we had to retaliate. At the same time, always, always, and always the issue of trying to make like all the maneuvers to won't harm civilians or those who are not involved. I wish those countries will understand what's the situation we are in. Australia is almost 600 times larger than Israel. They don't know where are their borders. I live in Jerusalem. The border is 3 kilometers. When they launch a rocket, they don't have to launch a rocket. They can throw stones on some houses.
So the Abraham Accord obviously opened this pathway to normalization and relations with Israel and these Arab countries. You would never imagine you could have this kind of dialogue. I want to just back up for a second. You see there's a tsunami of anti-Semitism building around the world. Most cities in the U.S., many cities in Europe, all over. If you were an ambassador now after the Hamas terrorist attack on October 7th, how would you handle defending Israel?
First, with the issue of the anti-Semitism, very upsetting. It's just unbelievable that we see it rising again. This is not only Israeli problem. Why we studied what happened in the Holocaust? That 6 million people, because of believing in something, they were marked. This was to abolish them from earth. How one can accept that? Fight anti-Semitism. It's a danger to the whole world. It's something new, like they use this criticism against Israel, criticizing their act with the Palestinian, and they use anti-Semitic motives in that criticism. You can criticize Israel. We are, everything is 100%. No, we do mistakes. Why do we have this issue with Iran? And they say publicly to destroy Israel and to put an end to that entity. And the most bothering thing is that highly educated people do not pay attention. Like, do you agree with that? We were really shocked in Israel to see these messages coming from top universities of the world.
You're talking specifically about the latest Ivy League schools saying that calling for the genocide of Jews is acceptable. That's what you're talking about.
It's shocking to hear it at the most advanced universities in the world, like the leadership of the world. It's unacceptable.
It's dangerous to not even have the basic facts, like something like 20% of Israeli citizens are Arabs and they have equal rights to all their citizens in Israel.
You are absolutely right. And enjoy all the rights of citizenship in Israel.
The anti-Semitism appears to be chic again and building in so many, not just college campuses, but New York City, where it's the largest number of Jews in America. They have shut down Grand Central Station, the Brooklyn Bridge. And it feels as though my original question about why Israel is so misunderstood as a country, and you started talking about all the contributions that Israel has made to the world, which I think is super valuable. But to me, it's starting to feel like just basic Jew hatred. And that's what's driving it.
It could be the historic reasons. Israel was conquered by other nations, and they try always to make Israelis accept it, like Hellenic and Romans and Persian and all that. They conquered half of the world, and whoever they conquered, they immediately turned to be part of them. And Jews and Israelis never accepted it. They fought against it. They took part of it, maybe the culture and the studies, but they never gave up keeping their unity of being Jews, believing in something.
You think envy is driving it?
Envy us. And for what? Because whatever we gain, we share with others. Technology revolution, for in communication, any communication system that you hold, even your that small mobile that you have, it has an Israeli compound. Take issues like drip irrigation. So we came with this solution of drip irrigation that you use the minimum of water, enjoy crops. I was in Africa. They had hardly one crop of like vegetables or something or tomato. We came with our technologies that they get it 6 times a year and so on in many, many fields. Medication. In Africa, we did another thing. You know, there were rivers have been polluted. How to purify those water, in medication. You know how many courses, how many students come from undeveloped countries to study in Israel, in South Africa and Botswana and all those countries. Doctors were coming from Israel, giving courses at the place for nurses.
With all these contributions that Israel makes to the world, you go as the ambassador and you represent Israel. Do the countries that you worked in, Finland and New Zealand and the Cook Islands and Tonga and Samoa and many countries where you were either ambassador or acting ambassador, they feel appreciative?
Very much. They really appreciate what we did. They saw it in their... Uzbekistan just gained their independence. We came and helped them. They have most beautiful fruit. This fruit were just apples and grapes, but it all was rotted. We came and they gave courses how to keep it in storages with a little bit of fertilizer that you give. You can bring something, the most beautiful apple that you can export it and you can get money from it. You know, they were so appreciated.
I want to go back to the question of this tiny little country that's basically sand, use their resources, their brains to develop themselves into outsized, incredibly huge relevance and contributions to the world. Yet it feels like Israel continues to be misunderstood. So Shemi, my question to you is, will there be a time when people understand Israel?
That time will come maybe when our region would be more peaceful. More countries in the region will sign peace treaties with Israel. The Arab countries of Egypt, Jordan, and Emirates, and countries that later on joined because of the Abraham Accord. Things has changed. They talk differently about Israel. We hope that one day it will also be with the Palestinians, that they will come forward to leave this war and like recognize that Israel is there and going to stay there. They do not recognize even Israel. Like, I have to go every morning look at the mirror that I'm existing. Yeah, that's when then I think it will come. And I hope it will come as soon as possible, because to give different future for our children, you can't change anything from the past. But definitely we can shape together a future. All of us will enjoy it at that time when they will enjoy it, and we will enjoy that peace with them. Then I think there'll be more understanding issue of this small country in the Middle East, that it's not a troublemaker. On the contrary, it's a country that contributes and try to make the world a little bit better. It's not in our hand always. And this is the problem.
Shemi, you're writing a book about your experience as an ambassador, weaving in a little bit of personal stories. What's the name of your book?
It's Ma'avarim. It means from place to place. You move from place to place. I was born in a small village bordering between Iran and Turkey to a family which it goes back from the time of the Babylonian conquered Israel and displayed the people in Mesopotamia of that time. And these people, for generations, thousands of years, the Babylonian exile was 586 BC. All that time, these people kept their Judaism. It means something unite them together. And it had been kept living nicely with their neighbors. But the call was always one day to come back to our country. Like every Friday we have in our prayers next year in Jerusalem, there is a symbol of coming back and to live in your country and to live in peace. Your country all the time, the peace is there. So it's called Ma'avarim, from place to place. So I came from there, living in kind of area which, because when they start coming back to Israel in the 50s, the country was small, they couldn't adopt all these newcomers. So we were neighborhoods with tents that they built just temporary. I was living in that temporary place almost 5 years. And from there, we're moving to Jerusalem, do something to the country. You can't just take and take and take. You have to contribute. I found that niche of diplomacy that, yes, I can contribute to this loving country.
You've retired. You're now teaching.
Our small country with determination and looking for those niches that we can contribute, it's lost case. No way, no way. Never give up like that. Try to explain. Maybe sometime I succeeded, sometime no.
Shemi, you have an amazing story. You have amazing life history. I really appreciate you spending some time with me today and sharing what it was like to be an Israeli ambassador, how you can share Israel's relevance to the world and contribute to the world. Are there any other quick stories that you have as an ambassador?
When I was in Australia, I was also ambassador to Fiji. And there is ladies who are working, doing all sort of small work, either in their farms or knitting. Hospital, which has some nurses, which like more as helpers. In that country, we had three courses, one for nurses. We brought two nurses from Israel to teach these young girls. And you should have seen how things has changed in that hospital in your eyes.
What did they share?
How you treat and how you take record and you use ultrasound machinery to bring it and to give it as a gift to this hospital for ladies. And they start coming from all over the villages to that main hospital to be checked and to get the treatment ultrasound, which was all together. It cost like about $30,000 at that time. And I saw the queue of the ladies coming, and the doctor told me how this changed his work and how he saved life. That was like the best thing to see. Your life has been there because of us Israelis. We did something small contribution like that.
That felt good. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah. There was another thing, another small, short story.
Yeah.
Pacific countries like Samoa, Tonga, Cook Island, Niue, they have that problem of they needed insulin actually because they all were suffering from sukari.
Sukari. What is that?
Glucose.
Oh, diabetes.
Yes. That was our contribution, and that makes the satisfaction unbelievable. This is really a gift that you get while you serve and you are far away from your country, from your people, from your relative.
But it's satisfying.
The satisfaction is just unbelievable.
Oh, Shemi, you're such a doll for spending time and talking to me, and I really, really appreciate it. I learned a lot, and I'm always so happy to share how Israel has contributed to the world in so many amazingly positive ways. We need more of those stories.
Now I have one thing to ask you. Have in mind also that in Israel, there are 129 people who were kidnapped by terrorist organization Hamas, which is like ISIS, and they held in tunnels. Nobody knows exactly where. Some of them need medication. Some of them were wounded. Elderly people, out of them, 10 out of the 129 are ages between 70 to 86. There are children, there are women, elderly ladies, young women, babies. To help us and to come with this message to government and to their government, to their, United Nations, the Red Cross, whoever can help, help them first and pray that they will be back united with their families and this message to the world.
Share that message. Yes.
Can't leave it just like that. That people kidnapped like that from their homes. Did nothing. No fighting and no harming anybody. Kidnapped from their home. Held by this organization. Every second day we hear that somebody just died in this captivity. We want them back alive quickly, as soon as possible. Do you think?
Thank you, Shemi.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to episode number 39 of the Going for Greatness show. I hope that Ambassador Tsur shed a little bit of light on Israel's contributions to the world from his perspective. I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts. One, to our absolute amazement, the anti-Israel and anti-Jewish sentiment on U.S. college campuses is at an all-time high. I would hope you could take a few minutes and take a deeper dive into who is funding the BDS movement, to take a deeper look into the source of this funding that is potentially from terror organizations and more specifically from Qatar. This is dangerous territory, not just for Israel, but for all of us in the West and all of us with Western values. If you found any value in this episode, I encourage you to share it with friends or post it on your social media. Thank you again for listening to the Going for Greatness show. I'm Jennifer Weissman.